Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Visit Purdy Insurance on Market Street in Sunbury or visit online at purdyinsurance.com. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Good snap, put down, kick is up by Ficken. The kick by Sam Ficken is good. And Penn State's on the board, and it's a one-score game with 3:45 to go in the third.
Adams will run the option to the boundary side. He makes the pitch late to Batts. Batts has an option to cut it in the middle. Now to the middle of the field of the 35-30. 25-20, 15-10, 5, touchdown, Javon Batts.
Sam Ficken, 25-yard attempt. Good snap, put down by Kaiser. Kick is up by Sam Ficken. The kick is good. It's 10-6, Rutgers. 13 minutes to go in the fourth.
Here's the rollout by Leiby. Throws it downfield. It's complete. First down, and maybe the touchdown by Adams, and he is into the pylon. Adams smartly finds the corner of the end zone, stretches the ball out over the pylon, and it's 6 for the Seal.
Second and goal at the 5. Near hash. Takes the snap. Gives the ball to Belton through the hole. Touchdown, Penn State. The Nittany Lions take the lead with 1:13 to go.
Back to pass, Schlegel. Schlegel with some pressures and hits split. Split to the 20, 15, 10, 5. Touchdown, Chekalemi. Split went right between the defenders, and yep, he split them. And the cannon goes off as the Braves get on the board.
Takes the snap. Back he goes on 3rd and 7. Loads it up. Fires for Hamilton. Got it midfield. Breaks the tackle. 45. Near side 40. 35. Hamilton to the 30. To the Rutgers. 26-yard line. First down, Penn State.
Batts turns the corner. Breaks 2 tackles and he is gone. And he is absolutely in the end zone, 65 yards.
Steps up, throws downfield. It's intercepted by Ryan Kaiser, and the Nittany Lions have closed it out in style.
Today's show being brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Purdy's has served the Valley for decades. They know what's best for their customers, and they take good care of you. We can't say enough about the Purdy family and what they've meant to the Valley. And also, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Key Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. We talk about the Hummel's Wharf, Sunbury Motors Kia. Kevin's driving a Kia this week.
A 2015 Kia Optima SXL Turbo that is made by Americans in West Point, Georgia. 5-star crash safety rated with the 5-year, 60,000-mile roadside warranty. Bumper to bumper for 5 years, 60,000 miles. And you know what? The Turbo Optima, they're using it in the GT manufacturer, in the GT series, GTS series. It's beating Ford, Porsche, Chevy, Nissan, and even Aston Martin in the Manufacturer Racing Championship that will be wrapping up here shortly. And the best part about it is if you like this kind of a vehicle, a lot of those type of vehicles that have turbo, you have to put premium gasoline in, not this one. You can use regular unleaded and still have the same output, unlike most of the turbo engines that are out there. And we'll be talking more about it throughout the week.
Really no surprise whatsoever to this veteran campaigner. All right, so let's get to it here. Dave, Brian, the Steelers take on the Carolina Panthers in Sunday Night Football, and we'll see if the Steeler effect, my goodness, Kevin, 2 East Coast teams.
The worst part is it's another primetime game, which means I got to stay up late on Sunday night. at least I got a chance to watch Red Zone Sunday afternoon.
2 East Coast teams, Kevin. That could be the swing.
It's going to add 4 million viewers to
anytime the Steelers are on a primetime game, that's going to be the biggest game of the week.
No question.
Yeah, okay.
America's team doesn't wear blue and silver, okay?
Yeah.
Let's just wait till Sunday night, next Monday, and we'll find out how well the Steelers drew.
My guess is instead of a 21, I'll bet they're up over 20. I'll bet 23 in the open, and it was 19 for the second game. I'll bet the Steeler game is up around 22. How about that?
Yeah, I think that. Yeah, I think that's fair. Now, if they lose one more game, it might not be that high.
Yes, but Kevin, they're not playing between now and then.
No, no, I mean in the next prime time. You knew what I meant.
Some days, to be honest with you, Bob.
Yes,
it's almost too easy. Fish. It's like going. Oh, it's even better than that. It's like going to the zoo to hunt deer.
Yes, it is.
All right,
fish in a barrel.
Let's go to the zoo and hunt some deer. This would be fun. Dave Bryan is here to talk about the Pittsburgh Steelers. Dave, normally we have you on the day after a game. A little unusual this time with Thursday night heading to Sunday.
Absolutely. It is rare. We've had a few days to digest that film, too, as well, and it's not pretty.
Okay, so when you digest that film, what did you see?
We saw a Steelers defense that not only was victimized by penalties in the game, I think something to the tune of 50-something on that side of the ball. We saw a defense that once again struggled with the outside zone that the Ravens ran, that the Cleveland Browns had ran the week before, mostly with success during the second half. The Browns did, and the Ravens had success pretty much all throughout the game with that. We also saw a Steelers defense that did not tackle well. You had several yards after first contact in that game. And, in the passing game, Joe Flacco was never forced to go down the field much at all. In fact, we went and charted this already, that Flacco only completed four passes past 7 yards past the line of scrimmage in that game, with his two long completions being of 10 yards each. Now, he was getting rid of the ball with less than 3 seconds most of that game, and you're not going to get sacks or pressure when that happens as well, too. So, that's defensively what the problems were. Offensively, Ben Roethlisberger was not sharp in that game. He had quite a few incomplete passes, but I went through and broke everything down. He had about seven of them, though, that you could probably pin on Roethlisberger. So when you add all that together, and you've got a team like the Ravens that didn't turn the football over, that's what you have happen, what happened Thursday night.
All right, so, Dave, let's take it a step further. And it might be too early to ask this question, but when you look at the game with Carolina, is it going to give you an indication of whether this team is closer to the first half of the Cleveland game or closer to the last six quarters where they got outscored 50-9?
Unfortunately, I don't think you're going to get a good measurement. If you lose this game, I think this is a game that they can win even though it's on the road and regardless of what we've seen in the first 2 weeks. With that being said, I don't want to disrespect the Carolina Panthers here, but, they're a 2-0 team that, in my opinion, hasn't played a lot of great football or fantastic football. They've played good enough to win, but I think this is a team that can be beat. In fact, I had this game circled as a win on the schedule for the Steelers before the season started. I'm not going to tell you which way I'm going right now on it, but I still think it's a winnable game right now. But on the flip side, I don't think it's the type of measuring stick where if the Steelers do win this game that we say, okay, well, everything's fixed. We're going into this game, the following game against Tampa Bay, Jacksonville, and on. No, I don't. I don't think this is a measuring stick at all. I think this is just one game on the schedule that the Steelers need to win.
Defensively, though, Carolina's, you can argue they're one of the top five defenses in the league. I mean, a lot of people will tell you that defense can flat out run. I mean, if they can score against them, I think it tells you something, doesn't it?
I'm not worried about the offense, Steve, with this team. I think what you saw the other night in Baltimore was just some mistakes and kind of a tight team on a short week. You didn't have a couple of weapons there. Lance Moore still isn't on the field yet. He's missed the first two games. You didn't have Dre Archer for whatever 10 plays that you're probably going to get him on the field for. You're playing in a hostile environment on top of it. And when your quarterback's not sharp like he wasn't the other night, that's what you're going to walk away with, 6 points in that game. And that's exactly what happened. So, yes, the Panthers' defense is good. I think it's a little bit of, you know, smoke and mirrors still being done with it. Now, they've got the fantastic middle linebacker in Keekly. We'll see whether or not Greg Hardy plays. You know, they talked earlier today, the head coach, Ron Rivera, said that he's going to practice all week. They haven't made a decision on him yet. But I still don't think this – I think it's what you need to worry about with the Steelers right now is what they're doing defensively. I think the offense is going to be able to score points this year, and that's why I think that you can't really use this game against the Panthers as a measuring stick, more from the defensive side of football for the Steelers.
You made a really interesting point in that answer, Dave. Again, I didn't take into account in asking the question. That was about the 4 days to get ready for the Baltimore game. Have you found Thursday nights, regardless of whether the Steelers are playing it or not, to be actually one of the more unpredictable nights to watch a game because of that?
I think across the board it is. I'm not going to pin this on the reason why the Steelers lost, because I'm not in that locker room. I'm not in the practices. But if you remember going back, I can remember saying this all of last year during the broadcast, you know, the Thursday night game. It always seemed like you saw some sloppy football in those games. Either it be both teams or one team. It really looked like some teams were playing on some short weeks. Now, you know, I don't go back and watch every team's, you know, all 22 film. I don't have time to do that. I wish I did. I need to clone myself, because I would definitely do that. But, you know, you don't have time. But I know the initial views through. Especially last season, there were times, and I think I even posted this on Twitter a few times, that, man, these short weeks, really, I just wish the NFL, you know, kind of get away from it, because I don't think the product that's taking place on those nights has been, you know, up to what the NFL wants out there. So, yeah, I think that could have had something to do with the Steelers, but once again, like I said, I'm not at practice. I didn't see our team prepared for this. It was on the road. You have to keep that in mind as well, too.
Yeah, that's a good point. Dave, what about when we talk about the defense, what kind of adjustment do they have to make? As you mentioned in charting Flacco, it wasn't like throwing the ball deep downfield. They were taking what they were given. So what do the Steelers have to take away so they're not giving it?
Well, I hate to keep going back to the three principles of the Dick LeBeau defense, and that's stop the run, don't get beat deep, and tackle the catch. Right. They haven't done that in the first two games. And Dick LeBeau's defense is predicated on getting offenses in predictable situations behind the chains. I'm talking about second and more than 7 or more yards. Right. I'm talking about third and 7 or more yards. Things where you know that the quarterback's going to have to drop back and pass. He's going to have to hold on to the football a tick or two longer, because his receivers have got to get down the field and get open. We're not seeing that so far. This zone, outside zone, is just absolutely killing this team. We talked about this just today on our podcast, how, you know, Cam Thomas is a guy they signed during the offseason. That was a move I was not on board with right all the way back in March there. I think they slowly need to start giving the rookie Stephon Tuitt some more snaps at left defensive end. I don't think he can play the outside zone worse than what Cam Thomas has done so far. Now, I'm not saying throw the kid out there for 40 or 50 snaps a game, but I think you need to get him in there. What I would do, too, is I would move Cameron Hayward over to the left-hand side. I would play Brett Kiesel on the right side on his normal side. Of course, Steve McClendon in the middle there. For as many snaps as I possibly can. And then when, you know, if one of those guys needs to rotate out at one of the ends, I send Stephon Tuitt in there at left defensive end and have the other guy flop over to the other side, or if Kiesel has to come out, vice versa there. But that's what I would do. It all starts with stopping the run. If they stop the run or the short pass on the earlier downs and start getting these teams behind the chains on second and third, you're going to see a lot of, the defense just can't help but play better. The secondary will also play better as a byproduct. You'll get more pressure on the quarterback, possibly more sacks and more turnovers. It's all a byproduct of stopping teams on the early down.
Right, yeah, getting them off schedule. When you look at Cam Newton, what do you see? I mean, he gets a lot of praise, but do you see someone who can be a consistent winner the way he plays the game?
You know, when his rookie season, I remember saying, I'm not sure Cam Newton can make it in this league. I have since changed that in my opinion of him. I think a great arm. I mean, that kid can really, really wing it. You know, as long as he protects his body, he's found out that, you know, he's not the Superman that probably he thinks he is in taking some of these shots. But I think he is a quarterback that can win on a consistent basis in this league, for sure. You know, I don't think he's where he needs to be X's and O's wise with the game. I think as he matures a little bit, which I think that's another thing that he needs to do still, I think he's going to be fine. Look, he's got a great wide receiver over there, a guy that I did a lot of film work with leading up to the draft, of course, talking about Kelvin Benjamin over there. That's really going to help him out. He's got a great veteran now in Jericho Cotchery. They're going to need more weapons over there. But I think Cam Newton is the quarterback that right now is dangerous. And look, we saw last year that they could win some games. And, you know, they weren't supposed to get off to a 2-0 start this year, and they have.
Absolute pleasure. I love how you break down tape. Really do. That's a big plus in listening to what you have to say, Dave. Thanks a lot for the time you carved out for us today.
Oh, I'm always here for you. Thanks for having me. We'll talk next week.
Dave Bryan. We'll hear from him again next week after the Steelers play Carolina and the ratings go up to 22.4. We'll come back with more in a moment. Today's show being brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
When you buy insurance, it's serious business. Because if something happens and you don't have the right coverage, you're out of luck and maybe out of business. So if you need insurance, business, home, auto, or flood, ask your agent about Selective. No gimmicks. Just great coverage and great response.
Get to know your local Selective agent, Purdy Insurance, on Market Street in Sunbury or at purdyinsurance.com. Find out what Purdy Insurance can do for you.
While looking for a vehicle, you know that if it sounds too good to be true, chances are it is too good to be true. You get the runaround, got to go from place to place. Well, you can just skip all of that and go straight to Sunbury Motor Company. Sunbury Motor Company has been satisfying more customers and selling more cars since 1915, so you know they've got it right. No offers that look good on paper or online, and then you get disappointed when you see them in person. Sunbury Motor Company offers a lineup few other auto dealers in the area can compete with. With the inventory of Ford, Hyundai, Kia, and Lincoln vehicles, there will be no problem finding the right vehicle that fits your needs and your budget. And the friendly, knowledgeable staff's ready and able to help you with everything from the test drive to the drive off the lot. See for yourself at Sunbury Motors. Sunbury Motors, Ford, Lincoln, Hyundai in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury. And Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. Look for them online anytime at sunburymotors.com.
All right, great to have you with us. Our thanks to Dave Bryan. Breaks down that Steeler tape for us every week of Neil Coulong on tomorrow. Also tomorrow, Dave Revson of BTN on. Had a great talk with Dave. Dave wrote a great book, which we're going to delve into tomorrow as well as the analysis of the Penn State-Rutgers game. Then coming up on Wednesday, Tony Knopp, the CEO of Spotlight Ticket Management, where for the first time ever, Kevin feels relief to talk about the business of sports instead of talking about the TMZ of sports.
That's right. For the first time, I'm excited about it, yes.
You know what? I mean, nobody is enjoying this at all. Nobody is because, look, we could talk about the commissioner and how the commissioners handle this and so forth. The players are the ones that are responsible for their own lives. And they are not handling that responsibility. Okay? They're not. All right?
Well, it's pretty uncharted territory for some of these guys.
Yeah, it is. And it puts commissioners and owners and others in the unenviable position of trying to be judge and jury when they're supposed to be a judge and a jury.
Well, but for different things. I mean, their idea in the commissioner's office is check on video replay, you know, mediate disputes among team owners, things like that. But this new era we're in professional sports is for them uncharted. There's no game book to tell you how to handle this. There's no frame of reference that you can see. And so what, like the NFL has done is they've called in a former FBI director to come in and investigate themselves. And
well, they're trying to see if the tape was actually in the building or not.
Exactly, but I think sometimes we learn from the Penn State experience with former FBI directors that it may not be the wisest thing you do, but for lack of a better something, you feel you have to do something if you're Roger Goodell or the team owners. You know, do something, and no one knows what that something is, Steve, and that's when the wheels fall off the car, right, so to speak.
But the difference between this and your reference to the free investigation is this. Robert Mueller can talk to everybody.
True.
And come up with a conclusion. Louis Freeh's report is incomplete and thus can't be used as the roadmap because legally those at authority in Pennsylvania who are trying to prosecute a case did not want him talking to Mike McQuarrie, Tim Curley, Gary Schultz, and he couldn't talk to Joe because Joe was sick and then subsequently Absolutely. Passed away. When you can't talk to the individuals that are involved to give you context, you can't have a complete report. That's why his report has always been incomplete.
No question about that. And hopefully,
I'm not being judgmental here. No. I'm just using the facts.
That's true. Relieved they didn't hire Louis Freeh. I think I think people have seen he's not the guy to go to.
Well, regardless, again, he'll at least have the ability to talk to everybody because it's not a criminal investigation.
Right.
And it's not like he's trying to put together a prosecutorial indictment.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Great to have you with us on a beautiful Monday. In fact, it looks like the weather for the next 2 weeks is going to be absolutely gorgeous. It was great to get out there with a little snap in the air today. Feel that in the morning as I was walking to teach class this morning on campus. Just felt that little fall snap, even though it's late summer technically. Went out and hit some golf balls at noon today and just felt that little snap in the air. Trees are turning just a little bit. It is fall. An incredible time of the year. High school football coming up on Friday night. Shikellamy in bounce back mode, looking to get back to 500 on Friday night. Kevin and the coach Dick Court will have that for you. Our Sunbury family of broadcast center is going to have four games for you to deal with on Friday night. Penn State football Saturday with UMass and the Nittany Lions at 4:00. It'll be a 2:30 airtime, and looking forward to that. And, of course, another big weekend of the NFL, including Carolina and the Steelers. But tonight's the Philadelphia Eagles. The Eagles are back in action tonight. This should be a really good game as they play at Indianapolis, Lucas Oil Stadium. Eagles looking to go 2-0, maintain the division lead. And Indianapolis, after the loss last week to Denver, looking to get back to 1-1. That should be a very good Monday night game. Tonight, looking forward to that. So a lot going on. Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. You can go to purdyinsurance.com. Purdy's have served this valley and their customers for decades. That's because they look out for their customers. Always look out for their customers. I don't care if it's auto, home, life insurance, whatever it happens to be. They take good care of their customers. When you've been in the valley as long as they have been, they're ingrained in the valley. Ingrained. Give back and also take care of people. It's Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. And the Sunbury Motors Studios, where I personally reside, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors, Kia Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. Kevin Herr is on hand today. Kevin, say hi to the crowd.
I how are you? I also wanted to ask you if you had seen the Jets game where Morningwig reportedly called a timeout. Now I watched him run down, and it appeared as though he was calling a timeout. Now, the official's focus was on the field. He heard timeout, gave the timeout, and, of course, Geno throws a touchdown pass in the process. but only the head coach can call a timeout. I don't necessarily blame the official in that particular situation, but why is Morningwig calling for a timeout there? I mean, why is he the one calling it is what I'm asking.
Because he probably looked out and saw something he didn't like. Either they were in the wrong formation or in the wrong set or didn't have the personnel grouping out there that he, wait a minute, that's not the personnel grouping I want. It could have been a number of things that he looked out and saw and was trying to tell Rex to call. Because he wasn't trying to tell the official timeout. No. He was trying to tell Rex to call timeout.
Right, right. And that's exactly what I saw, and I wanted to see if you saw the same thing. It looked to me like he wasn't trying to call the timeout. He was trying to get Rex Ryan to call the timeout in the process. And then the official overheard it, not being able to distinguish distinguish whose voice it was, just gave the timeout.
Right. I mean, and that stuff happens. That's just part of the game. That stuff happens, and it took away a touchdown. You know, the same thing, it could have taken away an interception. You just, you don't know what the result of the play is going to be. So, either way, I saw it. I was watching. That's the game we had on here, as a matter of fact. So,
Steve, Saturday night at Rutgers Stadium, from, say, 6:30 till kickoff, what was the atmosphere like in the whole area? You know, was it as electric as it seemed to be on television and radio?
No.
Okay.
Okay, then.
It was loud, but it wasn't over the edge or anything like that. It was loud, but not overly so. And I say this with all due respect, please. I didn't fall off the broadcast turnip truck yesterday, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But I've been in louder, wilder, and more raucous atmospheres. That doesn't mean it wasn't a loud, wild, and raucous atmosphere. I've just been in louder ones.
Yeah, because, the TV, and I was listening to you and Jack on my headset in my living room, and I was watching it on TV, so I got to hear your call about 4 or 5 seconds ahead of what actually was being, but the announcers for the Big Ten Network were talking about this great atmosphere, and I was looking at the shots and listening to the radio, and I didn't get the same sense that they had. And if it was loud and raucous, it was a lot of Penn State fans making a lot of noise, obviously in the last 4 to 5 minutes. But
Of the stadium was Penn State.
Yeah.
A quarter of the stadium was Penn State. But see, part of what my issue is that we were a little bit recessed in that booth. So in other words, if I was just sitting in my seat and I looked to my right, I could only see half the scoreboard because the wall came out that far. And so for me to really get out and look at the atmosphere in front of me, I'd have to stick my head out the door. I mean, I'd have to really get the feel of it. But here's the other part. When I have headsets on, it blocks out a lot of the noise to begin with. I mean, even in Beaver Stadium, boy, weren't we loud today. And I'll sit there and go, yeah, so you tell me you were. Sure, yeah, okay. So the headset blocks out a lot of noise. I know it's really loud when I feel I have to talk above them.
Sure.
That's when I know it's really loud, where Jack and I have to really talk above the crowd so the two of us can hear each other, which has happened before. It's happened a bunch of times at Beaver Stadium. It's happened at Wisconsin. It's happened at Ohio State. It's even happened in Michigan. Okay? Those are the places where we've gone to. And in Nebraska, to a point, it's happened. Nebraska's a loud, wild place to go. Iowa at night. Same thing, where we felt like we had to talk above the crowd. We didn't feel like we had to talk above the crowd, which is a gauge to me as to how loud we thought it was.
Steve, I got Doug on the line from Wellsboro to check in with you today.
Hey, Doug, good questions on the show Thursday night and Saturday. We appreciate it. And I think you were the one that brought up about blitzing, I think, on Saturday, if I recall.
Yeah, I did. I brought that up. I also brought up about the weather situation. I knew they were calling for rain on Saturday, but I guess it didn't rain at all.
Rain before the game. It was raining pretty hard during the pregame show, Doug, and then right about maybe 15, 20 minutes before kickoff, it stopped. So it worked out well.
Hey, what can be done to fix this offensive line? I went back and looked at some of the tape. The Rutgers guys were even or past some of the Penn State guys even before they were out of their stances. I know they're kind of hoping for Diefenbach to come back, but he's been hurt. Is there anything that can be done to help him out at all?
Doug, other than continued reps, I'm not sure what else can be done. And I think that's one of the reasons, in my opinion, Doug, that you're seeing some of the trick plays that are put in or formations, because I think they're trying to figure out different ways, either out of the Wildcat where Hackenberg runs a fly sweep and then throws off of that, or they throw the lateral to Hackenberg and he throws out of that. I think what John's trying to do is John's trying to create lanes for Christian to throw the ball to take some of that out of the equation. I think the only thing that can solve it for these guys is to stay together and just keep getting reps, and then at some point maybe things kick in and they're able to get the job done. Because you have two redshirt freshmen in that offensive line, the guy that played defensive tackle last year, and right now it's a building process there where there's some good plays, and you and I both know there's struggles.
Hackenberg just can't keep getting hit like that, or he won't last, you know, through the Big Ten schedule. Hey, I'd like to ask Bob a question.
Sure, go right ahead, Doug.
Last week with the judge's decision, they essentially granted discovery or standing with discovery. Is that correct?
That you're talking, of course, about the suit that the Paterno family filed in Center County Court, and then the NCAA was a defendant and filed what we know as preliminary objections, and the County Court of Common Pleas judge in Bellefonte, Center County, ruled largely in favor of the Paterno family and allowed the case to go forward, dismissing the most serious preliminary objections the NCAA had. So, yeah, the next step in this would be discovery, which can take the form of not only depositions, but what we call written admissions, and also written acknowledgement of facts. So, and also turning over documents. So it's about four different things that goes forward from this point in that lawsuit.
With discovery, are they limited? Is there certain bounds on discovery, or can they look at everything?
The answer is discovery is the discovery process is one where, let me give you an example. In a deposition, they could ask a question of the NCAA president. Sir, what did you know on this date? What did you do on that date? And the counsel can say for the NCAA, I object. And the response is, okay, you still have to answer the question. And ultimately, because there's no judge in the room to rule on objections, although it is noted that there was an objection made, but the NCAA president would have to answer that question. And down the line, then a judge would rule whether that's material or relevant, etc. But it's a pretty freewheeling process, and there are few boundaries that occur.
That's why, Bob, I don't think it's ever going to get to that point.
I think my take on it is very similar to yours, because you can. And then what happens, Steve and Doug, is this: if the defendants, the NCAA, and the various witnesses try to stonewall or stop the plaintiff, the Paterno family, can go forward and seek sanctions, or what are known as motions to compel, where if you don't do it, the penalty, if you were, is to be held in contempt of court. So, yeah, moving to discovery is something the NCAA definitely didn't want to have happen. It will happen, and I guess then the question becomes, we'll see where we go. Because there's lots of things I'm sure that the plaintiffs, Joe's family, would love to find out.
Well, and thanks for taking my question today, guys.
Okay, Doug.
I don't think they're ever going to be allowed to, Bob. I really don't. I think they're going to sit there and go, okay, now, so how can we make sure this is taken care of?
Let's talk. And I think any civil lawsuit, Steve and Doug, is a judge will normally get the sides together in conferences and say, all right, what impediments are there to settling this matter? Because very few civil trials, unlike criminal trials, actually go to a jury trial. Now, there are some. Usually it involves like, say, car crashes where there's millions of dollars, and they're not arguing over liability. This, how much money is a jury versus a settlement going to occur? And that's this is not a case where that's money is at issue. So this is a case that can easily be settled, and a judge just might want to knock some heads on both sides to get it done.
Right. Okay, we head to the top of the hour.
Real quick, I have Tony on the line for you next. Sorry, Steve.
Tony, welcome. Hi, Tony.
Hi, Steve. Hey, I don't know if it's just me or what, but it seems like it takes Hackenberg an awful long time to hand the ball off. And he's handing it off pretty far in the backfield. I mean, is that just me noticing that?
Well, I haven't noticed it. That doesn't mean it's not happening, Tony. I'll take a closer look at that in Saturday's game and see if I get the same feeling you do. To this point, I haven't, but that doesn't mean it hasn't happened. It doesn't mean your observation isn't correct.
I mean, it's pretty hard to hold those blocks too long. You know what I mean?
Right. Oh, sure. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, well, I just thought maybe, you know.
That's an interesting observation. I know I'm going to talk with John Donovan on Thursday. I'll bring that up and see what he thinks about it.
Hey, okay, great. Hey, have a good day, guys.
Hey, thanks. That's an interesting observation. It's something I haven't noticed. So, and maybe Tony's on to something. I don't know. We will come back with more in a moment. Kevin trying to improve NBC's ratings by sending them a memo that have only East Coast teams.
Yeah. Yeah, that should help. All right,
News Radio 1070.
Only the Steelers, how's that?
Yes, outscored 50-9 in their last six quarters. People are flocking in droves to watch that one here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Okay. Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. After the game was over, I was sitting on the bus waiting for everybody else to come over and get rolling so we could go up to Newark International and make that 36-minute flight back to State College. We still got back at 3:30 in the morning, by the way. And as I was sitting there, the bus driver had on ESPN New York, and it was just the ESPN national radio feed. And they were discussing Boston College and USC. And Boston College won 38-31 over USC up at Chestnut Hills. A great win for Steve Addazio and for BC. And part of the focus of the discussion, and I think it was a good, solid, interesting discussion, was about how the sanctions have affected USC, how they can beat Stanford one week, go to the East Coast, and lose the next week because of the depth in the program. Now that brings it, of course, back to Penn State and what we're watching Penn State deal with. I think the old mindset, which is easy for all of us to fall into, because obviously I've been around this for 38 years now, all the time, is that you look at a game like, I don't care who it is, Rutgers, Indiana, Illinois, whatever, and you say to yourself, okay, you know, they'll beat Rutgers, they'll win by at least, you know, 15 to 25 points. You know, in fact, they'll win by three touchdowns because that's what the old Penn State would do. They had more talent. They had more depth. They had more everything. They play Indiana. They got more talent. They got more depth. They have more everything because that has been what we have been used to with Penn State football when they were on even footing in terms of the scholarship numbers compared to everybody else. And I have discussed on this show that at least temporarily, we have to have a new standard. At least, you can have any standard you want. I have to have a new standard of mindset going into each game as to what I think I'm going to see or not see. And based on that, because they really only have 67 scholarship players right now. You got Jake Kiley, Miles Diefenbach, Ben Klein, and Adam Brenneman all out right now. Now, other teams have injuries, too, so it's not like they're playing with a full complement of 85. They aren't. But still, Penn State has 67 scholarship guys. 67, because Stanko counts.
Mm-hmm.
All right? They have 67 scholarship guys. What they're doing right now is really remarkable.
They've won 18 of 27 games in this stretch. 18 of 27 games. Everyone thought they would lose 18 out of 27. And to see them at 3-0 right now, 1-0 in the Big Ten, right, they beat Central Florida, good team. They beat Akron, decent team. They beat Rutgers, good team. Hey, they haven't beaten any great teams yet. But they're 3-0. And with 67 scholarship guys available, and of course some of those guys are redshirting, obviously, it's remarkable. And when I asked Joe Susan the question about with scholarships, what has that done for your practices, that question was asked with a purpose by me. Because remember, Penn State, part of what you're doing in practice is normally you redshirt, pick a number, out of 25 guys, you'll redshirt 17 of them. That's the foundation and athleticism of your scout team. Okay? And when you have depleted numbers, you don't quite have that, despite I know everyone loves the walk-ons, but some of them are able to get into that level and some of them aren't. It's just as simple as that. And I think that what they're doing right now, based on the current climate and circumstance, is remarkable. And I know they have issues to overcome, but it's a lot more fun to overcome issues when you're winning games as opposed to being 0-3 and saying, uh-oh, where do we go from here?
You know, Steve, I think there's one thing in the calculation that you make, and it's simply this. Yes, there's only 67 scholarships, but those are 67 Penn State scholarships. Those are kids who have shown by sticking with the program how much determination and drive they have to be successful. And I don't think there's any program in the country that can say that about the scholarship players they have, with some, you know, approximates. But those 67 really, really, really want to be Penn State players. And I think what's been going on, combined with at least so far, two absolutely incredible coaches who have come through State College, one passing through and one there now. The good fortune of Penn State, but I think you make your own good fortune. And I'm impressed, as everybody, all Penn State fans are. But boy, those kids, they really want to play for Penn State.
I think there are only 8 to 10 programs in the country that could have survived this at the level Penn State's surviving it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, one of them, by the way, is USC. I think USC, to its credit, has been able to keep its head above water with the scholarship rollback, because they were playing with 75 for a few years and no bowl game and so forth. And, you know, USC has not gone into the tank. USC still has an issue where they can beat Stanford one week and then lose to Boston College the next. But that's a product of all of this. I think there are only 8 to 10 schools that could survive this, keeping their head above water. And Penn State and USC, to a point, are two of those 8-9 programs that can. Fan base has been incredible. Coaches have been incredible. Players have been incredible. The circumstances have been incredible.
And, you know, Tony from Shamokin is a typical Penn State fan who, when you check with John Donovan, if Tony is right, I nominate him for the Kevin Herr 12th Man Award.
There are 12 Kevin Herrs.
Wow. I'm honored.
There's just one, but he would get Tony from Shamokin gets the 12th Man Award if he's right.
They named an award after you.